It is Saturday, June 6th, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news and online collaboration document editing. We'll tell you more about what that is in just a little bit.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks. Miles Elam, he's a slacker and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
We also have Al Luckow. Al Luckow is a new media architect.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Good.
We also have Mr. Ben Jaffe, and like Ben Jaffe, Ben Jaffe's a freelance media guy, which means that he's available for consulting work, whether it be streamlining your Macintosh experience or editing movies and sound or teaching. Ben's available for that kind of thing.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's start the geek news, and I think, Al, I'm going to start with you. I'm a little curious about what's going on with you, because last week you weren't here, so that's why I'm starting with you. But pick away. Whatever you'd like to talk about first.
Well, I don't know. Kind of start out on a somber note.
You sure you want to start out in a somber note?
Well, we don't have to.
No, that's fine.
I mean, but we should. You know, everybody dies, even geeks. Thing is, a lot of us have all these accounts: Flickr, email, eBay, gaming memberships, financial accounts. What happens when you're playing World of Warcraft and you have a heart attack and you keel over on your keyboard? Aside from messing up your game,
yeah, that would really your character would
probably not going to win.
Or right,
it leaves your loved ones with a big tar ball of mystery.
Tarball?
Well, that's a computer reference.
Okay.
So, what do we do? Somebody dies. I mean, in this day and age, we all have all these accounts. We're all doing all this stuff. You die, all of a sudden, you're just your Facebook, everything. Well, there's companies now that actually specialize in dealing with this kind of thing. One of them's called Legacy Locker. Another one's called Asset Lock, formerly YouDeparted.com. And what they do is you sign up with them, and usually there's some fee, and you enter in all your data, and you give your preferences that say, you know, if I die and you're notified, then call these people to verify it and then request the death certificate, and then you will release my information to this person. And so it's kind of like an insurance thing that just sort of says, you know, here's where, you know, all my stuff is, you know, to, you know, your wife or whoever. And really, it, you know, what happens when a person just vanishes? Nowadays, you just can't vanish. We're too connected. We have too many social content. What is everybody going to think? You know, what are people on your face? Hey, Al hasn't updated his Facebook quite a while. What the hell?
So the service, I mean, it does sound like a good thing to have done. It seems a little morbid to set it up.
It is. But these things have kind of existed. There's some places, findagrave.com says they have, like, cemetery records for 32 million people. Mm-hmm. Eternalspace.com has a thing where you can do a virtual memorial for people. And, mm-hmm. I've always thought, you know, it's like when somebody dies, it'd be pretty cool to have, like, I don't know, like a gravestone that's got, like, I don't know, the person there and saying,
yeah, there's a bit of that. I heard of complaints recently at where the cemeteries, of course, have these screens where the person's speaking. about their life.
Really?
And it's triggered by people walking by it.
Uh-huh.
And so if you're going and visiting somebody else, all of a sudden some departed person speaking to you, you don't even know. You're like, please leave me alone.
Guys. Yeah, you probably have to have like a motion sensor.
But this is actually a pretty important thing. I mean, like in my wallet, there's a little note to Miles, actually, mm-hmm. that says, you know, if something happens to me, give this to Miles, right? And it has some information on how he can... he can actually access all my accounts and stuff, right? So that backup plan is actually kind of important. I've got I got all my email history and
Miles didn't know
about it. I didn't tell Miles about it. It's too morbid.
Yeah, but it's something to think about. I mean, because there are a lot of things. I mean, I always thought, what are people going to do that email me? He's not emailing me back, or you know. Yeah.
And of course, what we're talking about is that your loved ones don't necessarily know your passwords.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, you just even getting into your computer,
or even what accounts you have and use. Right. Like, I've got two different sites that have a whole bunch of photos on them, and if I'm gone, I'm going to want my people to ride me to get the access to those photos. So okay, cool. So you got those services up on our website.
Yeah, yep. They're they're up there, and just something to think about.
All right. So. Thank you.
I'm really glad that organist finally stopped playing the music outside.
Yeah, where'd that guy come from? Because it was coincidence.
Yeah, I don't know.
Let's go over to Mr. Elam. Hi.
Hi. One of the fallbacks, one of the drawbacks, I should say, to the internet is DNS. It's the Achilles heel of the internet. While we worry about secure communications over the web, like through a web browser having a TLS, an encrypted tunnel going back and forth, or secure shell access to our servers, DNS in general ends up being this plain text out in the open with no easy verification thing out there that everything else depends upon. If DNS goes away, for all intents and purposes, the internet stops. Like, no one uses it.
It's a very important thing.
Because when you are typing in www.google.com, what's going on is your browser is going to your computer saying, hey, who's www.google.com? Your computer then goes to your ISP and asks that and goes up down a chain and says, oh, well, that is this IP address. And so your browser actually makes a connection to the IP address, not to that name that you know as www.google.com.
Right. One of the ways, translation service, basically, but fundamental use translation.
Right, but one that that is not secure. It is not verified.
Oh, really? So basically what you're saying is if I'm on a network and I say, hey, I want google.com, some other service could kind of intervene and give me the wrong address.
Right. This is what's known as DNS poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
So an ISP that is unscrupulous could do this, could give you wrong information, or someone in the network chain, someone who worked at a major hub, could change that information. This is why we have something called Domain Name System Security Extensions, or DNSSEC.
Uh-huh.
However, it hasn't had wide adoption. The good news is that now we are getting wide adoption in the .org top-level domain, and the top-level domain servers that are managed by the National Institute of Standards and Technology and ICANN.
Why the .org?
That's just the one that did it first.
Oh, cool.
.com is also a much larger pool to have to worry about, so .org is probably safer to
You'd think that you'd try this out on .net first, considering it's mostly ISPs and people know what's going on.
Then again, .org has been fairly quick and migrating to different technologies.
It also makes sense because the org space, which means organization, which means basically nonprofit organization in the United States.
Well, that's what it originally
meant. It doesn't mean that necessarily now. It's interesting because that's this, to some degree, doing better for society goal rather than making money, which is the .com space. Now, this is, of course, not exactly restricted in that format.
Right. KUSP.org.
GeekSpeak. .org. It's amazing. All right, cool. Security coming for DNS makes us a better and safer world.
And what this does is it sets up a certificate, much like you would have for TLS, for your browser, for a website,
for SSL.
So secure communications. Now, the drawback to this, and people need to be aware that this is going to be coming down the pipe, is that you're going to have to get a certificate signed by some third-party certificate authority, just like you do for a website, for DNS entries, if you want this all to work and
for every website you go to, you have to sign?
No, for every DNS server.
So your one ISP that you are dealing with that connects your house to the internet is the one you would.
You may go through your ISP as an intermediary, but really chances are you'll be going through an organization like VeriSign.
Well, the separation is that the end user person at their home that has DSL and stuff doesn't have to deal with this at all. If you own a domain and you're hosting that somewhere on a NAMM server, then you've got to deal with it. For example, GeekSpeak actually has its own domain name server, and we serve the geekspeak.org name off of that, and we'd have to get a system
Is still optional, just like having – you can have a web page that does not use SSL.
Right.
Does not use TLS.
We should do it, though, and learn how to do it. That'd be cool.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Elam. I appreciate that.
But you can't do it without the top level being done, and the top level
is going to be done. The top level is going to be done. Okay. Does that mean the browsers have to be updated to support this?
This is an operating system thing. DNS is not a browser-specific thing. It's an operating system.
So the
OSs
have to do it. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you, Miles. Ben, hi.
Hello, hello.
Hey, last week we had a call about – we were talking a bit about streaming services, and somebody emailed us during the week to talk about streaming service, an alternative to Pandora. There's a whole bunch of services out there, and you've been doing some research on it. What did you find?
Yeah, there are tons and tons of services. So I should just qualify everything I say by saying I only tested a certain number of services. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are services out there I haven't tested, but here's what I found. So the one that was suggested via email was iMeme, I-M-E-E-M. By the way, all of these are going to be up on the GeekSpeak website in just a second. Anyway, so I did not like this one. It had a very bad interface in my opinion. It seemed to be pretty reminiscent of MySpace, actually. Mm-hmm. It was like it was trying to do too many things at once. And the interface was you would bounce around to different pages to add things to playlists and whatever.
I hate to do this to you, Ben, but I don't know if we want to go into each one of them. But you did kind of write these notes up, right?
So I did write them up. So, okay, then I'll just skim through. So iMeme, trying to do too much, you have to change. Not the best thing. Pandora, many of us have heard of. You can navigate while playing. You can make suggestions for songs, but it won't play a song on demand. So if you want to hear a specific song, it won't. You can't just say, "Hey, Pandora, play this one for me."
Mm-hmm.
Nootsie, which is also up there, you can navigate while playing, make playlists. It'll play the songs from the playlist, but again, it's not quite on demand, right? You can't say, "I want to listen to this song." Spotify, it has been getting a lot of press lately. Apparently, it's the cat's meow, if you will. But it's not available in the U.S., so no one over here can test it. So international listeners, check it out. Apparently, it's supposed to be awesome. The one I use is Grooveshark, and I think it's built in Flex, which means that you can navigate around while playing because you're actually on one. You're actually in one SWIFT file.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a symbol, your playlists. It has autoplay. It's not as good as Pandora, but you can play songs on demand as well. So it seems to have all
the
features.
Use. What's the name of it again?
It's called Grooveshark.
Cool.
And I kind of want to get them on the show at some point. But anyway, very cool.
So Grooveshark is the one that you really
Grooveshark
think is the one to go.
Grooveshark is the one,
yeah. And you put up a blog entry, and I've just published that blog entry up on the GeekSpeak show page for today so people can find your notes.
I did too.
Stuff about that.
Okay, cool.
Amazing how we do these kind of things.
Yes.
Thanks, Ben.
So it's up there.
All right. Al, I'm going to bounce back over to you.
Sure.
Another news entry. And
sure.
Last week you weren't here to talk about robots.
Right, I know a lot of people are really upset about not knowing what's going on with the robots.
You know what? Ben covered for you.
We found
a robot that could pick people up and shake them and take their money.
That's important to let people know about that.
Yeah, it turns you upside down and gets you your pocket change.
So what do you got this week?
Well, multiple robots using one brain.
No, it can't be.
Wait, can we say brain, really?
Brain, yeah. It's kind of like they were showing, I saw this thing. This is, we all have, people have seen Roomba vacuum cleaners and, how they kind of go there. But there's some researchers in the UK that are working on this system where the robots all are accessing the same intelligence. So basically the personality of the robot jumps from robot to robot. So the idea is to have it in your house, and it's kind of like CSS for robots,
mm-hmm.
or maybe a SIM card for robots. So you have all these robots in your house, and one of them you just talk to it and say, I'm doing this or whatever. I need the I need the clothes folded, and it kind of transmits information to another robot that's the clothes folding robot. And then you go to bed, and there's a robot in there, and the personality of the robot jumps from robot to robot, So each one can, it's still think you're talking to the same robot, and you are, and it's just all accessing one processor.
Okay, that's
so it's so, like your whole house is a personality.
So the artificial intelligence or communication system and stuff is one CPU, one location, and then it uses these different interfaces to interact with you. It's a
right.
way to think
and,
about
and
it.
And the
right?
robots are all different kinds. The idea I think was is being spearheaded by Kirsten Dautahan at the University of Hertfordshire in Hatfield, UK. I just want to make sure that. And it's a Europe-wide project, but
okay,
that's where
so
it's originating.
The robot's not the robot brain's not Europe-wide, is it?
You know, not yet.
Well,
not
thing,
yet.
This that's the HAL from 2001, right?
It's
the entire
is.
Every door, everything is him.
Yep, and it's just all over the place. And in a way, it's scary. But then in another way, that means if they ever rebel, we just have to get to the main robot brain. But then it could jump to other robots.
Yeah,
so I don't know. You know, it's something to consider because this whole, you know, they're getting so close now. They even have robots. They're even working on robots that can anticipate what you're going to do. That's another issue. You know, it's this organization called JAST. It's another European thing. I guess Europeans are really into getting this. It's Joint Action Science and Technology Project. Mm-hmm. And they're basically trying to find ways to have robots anticipate what you're thinking and what you're, you know, just to make it more natural, you know, when you're talking to robots.
So to make it sound more like a human?
To make it feel like you're talking to a robot. And they have video of this. I mean, this link should be on our site. But they've got video of people just like sitting on a couch and a robot comes up and, you know, it wants to, you know, anticipate what you're doing. They kind of programmed them to be more like dogs, mm-hmm. you know, kind of where they just come to you. And there's some thought that, well, maybe people don't want to be bothered by robots when they get home from work. But they kind of come up to you and try to guess what you're thinking and stuff. And that's another scary thing, because what if you have one of these robots? It's all this collective brain and it's anticipating what you're doing. And now it's guessing what you're going to be up to.
Right. It makes your coffee for you. Yep. And then it answers the phone, says, no, sorry, Frank. Can't go out tonight. He's busy with the TV.
Yeah, right. You know? He always watches TV on Tuesdays. He doesn't want to talk to you.
Right. And then all these rumors argument. Get started.
And then you start having an argument. You got to get divorced right. from your robot. It's just a mess. Just,
I know.
All right.
Know.
Thanks for the robot update.
Sure.
That's
Miles,
a bleak future.
Miles, let's talk a bit about education.
Yes. There's a paper posted in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences analyzing the disparities between men and women in math.
Yeah.
And their findings are there isn't any difference between men and women in math, boys and girls in math.
Any difference in the sense that there's...
In terms of intrinsic in the brain. In the U.S., there is a difference. For example, in the U.S., men earn 70% of the PhDs in math.
Math, right.
But that's down from the 95% in the 1950s. And no woman has ever won the Fields Medal, which is Math Nobel Prize.
Uh-huh.
However, what they find is even though... in the U.S., among students scoring a 99th percentile mm-hmm. for math achievement, boys outnumbering girls 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
That's only among white students.
Interesting.
Among Asians in the U.S., girls outnumber boys very slightly, just as they do in Britain, Iceland, and Thailand.
Well, you're aware of the cultural differences in the way that the people think about numbers, right? The Asians, their numbering system is very simple to understand for them. So oftentimes, this was in that...
In what way?
This was in that book. What's that book that guy just wrote that's...
That one, yeah.
You know, the whole... It's not,
that was a
it's
good
not,
book.
It's not Blink.
Everyone should read it.
Malcolm Gladwell wrote another book called Outliers.
They
talk about how the numbering system is really easy to understand in like Korean
you mean
and
from
stuff.
From a language perspective, when
yes.
you speak about it.
And so, actually when they talk about fractions, instead of saying 3/5, they say, you know, 3 parts out of 5. You know, it's just
right,
very
so
literal.
The language itself
so
is more literal.
It's easy to understand. So when Miles keeps saying in the U.S., that's important to know.
Right.
Except that we don't see this in many other countries, including ones that aren't Asian, like, ones that are English speaking, for example, such as Britain.
Okay. So was this first showing no difference a Britain study? And can you explain the study?
Well, it's showing all around, showing many different countries, but it's also showing in the U.S. and it's showing from different social groups,
uh-huh.
saying that the main quoting from this. The main reason many fewer females than males excel in math in most countries is not lack of innate ability
right.
or intrinsic aptitude, but gender inequality. It's a social thing.
Right. Because gender is actually a social assignment. And to be clear, we cover this kind of stuff quite a bit. I'm not surprised at all that it's not an innate ability. I mean, we know that from multiple studies. So
right,
this
but
one,
this actually has data
quite a large data.
It up saying
nice. It's always nice to see more of that.
That you're seeing that the only correlation is a social issue, not a genetic or biological.
And are we seeing any sign that it's getting better in the U.S. by chance?
Well, obviously it is because the number of the percentage of PhDs is becoming much closer.
Yeah.
We still don't have a Fields Medal winner that's a woman, but at the same time, things are getting better. And this, I hope, will lay to rest some of those myths about how, well, just naturally boys are better than girls at certain things. It's absolutely not true.
Right.
It's been proven to be.
Who believes that stuff nowadays?
Some of the texts here, you also talk about the No Child Left Behind show that girls have reached a parity with boys in math achievement through high school.
Yes,
that's impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, that means we're really getting a lot better at removing that gender stigma or whatever the structure is that causes this thought that boys are better in math that then translates into performance changes.
Right. In fact, many times in early life, girls are outperforming boys.
Right.
So, but I mean, still within the margin of error.
Yeah. Cool. So we're going to see a balancing in math skills, and probably because of that,
or more of a recognition that there is a balance in math skills. That there.
Okay.
Is
All I'm saying, the reason I say we're going to see a balance in math skills is if you believe that you're bad at math and you do high school and then college that way, you're not going to be in math, and therefore there's going to be less people that feel that way or the society forces doing math, and therefore the best mathematicians will percentage-wise be men. Yeah. So what I'm saying is we should start seeing, if it's balanced in high school, we should start seeing college numbers tracking that
a lot
closer.
I get what you're saying, but if the issues are social, that it means that it's beholden on all of us
to
keep that up, that social, because if we just take it for granted and then leave it alone, inequality is going to show up, even if it could go either way. It could go women falling behind again.
Well, great. Well, I mean, at least it feels like good information to get. I mean, I'm excited about it. Thanks. All right, I think we've got time for another news story. And is it Ben's turn?
Yeah.
You sure? Yeah. Okay.
So.
Great. All right, Ben. Go for it.
Okay. Well, I just want to talk briefly about this femtosecond laser that they have at the University of Rochester.
When you say fem, are you talking about a size?
Femtosecond. Femtosecond, which is one quadrillionth of a second.
Oh, okay. So you're saying a unit of time, femtosecond.
Femtosecond with a T.
All right.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's really, really, really short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the same as a second is to 32 million years.
Okay.
And it's really, really small, right? And then also, actually it's a couple femtoseconds that the laser burst is, and during that burst the laser uses as much energy as the entire grid of North America uses within that two or three femtoseconds, right?
Okay.
But what's so crazy about this is a femtosecond is so small you can power this thing from a wall outlet.
Oh, interesting.
It's nuts. Anyway, so they've been doing all kinds of crazy stuff over the last 5 years or so.
What does the laser do?
it fires these pulses, and they're really short. And no, so one thing that they can do is they can create what's called black metal, which is they take any number of these elements, right, any number of these metals, and they fire this laser at it. And in the area that they fire it, it creates these nanostructure, which makes the material black, with no paint or anything like that. So you can actually change the material itself so the material is black. And depending on how you do it, you can change it to be actually different colors to reflect light differently. But the story that's been in news lately is they trained this thing on the filament of a traditional incandescent bulb, light bulb. And they found that when they fired this femtosecond pulse on this filament, it actually made it more efficient. Somehow, How much more efficient? Is a 100 watt bulb would consume a far less electricity, like less than a 60 watt bulb.
Huh.
Not that we'll be using regular filament bulbs 5 years from now, but
yeah, exactly. We're not saying that. I mean, certainly they could probably.
Does it have to do with the filament actually being a black body radiation, and so when you change the material structure? What the heck's going on? And actually, hold that thought for a second. Research it, because I got to say that GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Today on GeekSpeak, we are talking with one of the the CEO of Etherpad, Aaron Iba, and we use Etherpad for every show for the past, I don't know, 3 months or something like that. It's a really great system where it allows multiple users to edit one document at the same time. We all see each other's edits, and basically the stuff I'm reading right now, any of the geeks could edit. We also use it as a public space for chatting and asking questions. So please join us right now if you'd like to see how the system that we're about to start talking about is actually working. To do that, go to geekspeak.org and click on today's show page. On the left, it says Geek Chat. Optionally, if you'd like, you can go to etherpad.com/geekspeak. And I'll be introducing Aaron in just a second. Of course, we are taking your calls on topic today. That means if you want to talk about Etherpad or online application development or collaboration, please feel free to give us a call. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. The Santa Cruz Art League announces the opening of their 79th annual statewide exhibit, Irreplaceable Places Through the Eyes of Contemporary Landscape Painters of California, featuring nearly 100 original works of art on display May 30th through June 28th at 526 Broadway in Santa Cruz. That's the Art League's location. Artist reception and awards ceremony will be Saturday, June 6th. I think that's today, from 3 to 5 p.m. Information is available at 426-5787. You're listening to Geek Speak on Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. And in the air with me, I've got Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam, who's staying with us or no? No, Miles will be saying goodbye. Miles, thanks for doing news with us. And Al Luckow, we're about to speak with Aaron Iba. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Great Infusions Coffee Beanery and Espresso Machinery Showroom, offering artisan coffees, coffee makers, and specializing in home espresso machines, parts, and repairs. Located at 317 Potrero Street on the corner of River Street in Santa Cruz, or online at www.greatinfusions.com. All right, Aaron Iba now joins us via Skype, and Aaron is the CEO of Etherpad. Now, Aaron, is Etherpad actually the company name or just the product you've got that's so awesome?
Technically, the company is AppJet.
Okay.
But, like, we put Etherpad on our business cards. It's our main brand.
Yeah, it's a pretty great brand. So how long has it been running, and what's the development site? Have you been developing it for a while?
Yeah, well...
Maybe you should explain what it is. I mean, okay. People don't know what it is.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, explain what it is.
Okay, cool. So Etherpad is a way for multiple people to get on the same page. It lets you edit a text document in your web browser, and as soon as you edit the document in any way, like even typing a single keystroke, that edit is immediately reflected on everyone else's screen. So we call this really real-time text collaboration.
In fact, it's so real-time that right now, while you were speaking, Ben's writing in the Etherpad that we use internally for the show, and he's saying, hey, we didn't finish my news story, which I was able to read. So, Ben, did you want to wrap up that news story?
I'll just do it quickly. There's not all that much information in this particular news story about it, but, yeah, it creates nano and microscale structures on the surface of a filament. But one of the really cool applications that they're going to be able to do with this is make a filament radiate partially polarized light.
And, oh, interesting.
Yeah, by lining up these structures.
So you get an incandescent light generating polarized light without filtering.
Yes, exactly.
Which means it would be much more efficient polarized
light. Exactly, because when you put a filter in something, you're blocking all of the stuff that's not polarized in the same way as you're trying to get it to be.
Right, right.
Whereas if you're emanating the light and it's being polarized it's polarized as it's emanated, then you can have a much more efficient light bulb.
Right, right.
Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that's
okay,
the end.
So back to Etherpad. So to sum up a little bit what the application is, it's a web page you visit, like etherpad.com/geekspeak. And on the left-hand side is all the text of what people are editing. On the right-hand side are all the users that are editing it. And the users are color-coded, and the text they write is that same color. So you can see who's writing what. And at the same time as they're typing, kind of like a real-time chat system, you see what's happening. But the cool thing is you can copy and paste from it and basically collaboratively create a document. I'm assuming it would be really great for like note-taking.
Yeah, note-taking is one great application. A lot of academic institutions are starting to use it in the classroom for group note-taking. For example, at Stanford Law School, they split up into groups. They actually split up into groups of 8 people. They chose 8 because that's the limit of the number of users that can simultaneously edit a document in the free version of the product that we give away on etherpad.com. So at Stanford Law, the students split into groups of 8, like, and each group of 8 is like a group.
You know, we had a little bit of a problem with the sound. Somehow your mic is popping a bit. I'm not sure if you're bumping into it or what's happening, but it's pretty loud on our end.
Are you making popcorn? That could be it, too.
No.
You could be making popcorn. Because that would make that pop.
It might be a cable that's loose that is moving around. If you could reduce the amount of movement you got. I'm sorry, Aaron. So go on. So right now you got the free version that anybody can use, which is really cool. It's really easy to make it a new space. And you got paid version that allows more than 8 people to use it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
The paid version also provides more security features, and you can do things like run it behind your organization's firewall if you'd like to do that.
So what – we got to get a little geeky on this. What languages are you using, programming languages are you using to create Etherpad?
So it's a web application, so it runs on both a web server that we host and also some code runs in your browser in client-side JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And we wrote both the client-side part and the server-side part in JavaScript, actually.
Really? What are you using to process the JavaScript on the server side?
We use Rhino to compile the JavaScript into Java bytecodes, and then we run those Java bytecodes on top of the JVM.
So you guys are really a JavaScript house.
Yeah, we love JavaScript. We think it's a bit of an underappreciated language. It has sort of a stigma to it, but we think that's more related to the DOM API in the browser than the actual JavaScript language itself. The language itself is actually pretty nice and powerful, much like other popular scripting languages such as Ruby and Python.
Yeah.
You know, it's dynamic. And
it's matured a bit. And we're basically talking about ECMA script, which is actually the fundamental script, the actual scripting language that JavaScript is. And
yeah,
it's the same base that actually Flash uses in Flash environment. Adobe named it ActionScript. But it's really very similar. The language itself is basically the same language, just different types of APIs.
Syntax is very similar to ActionScript.
I mean, typing into it feels like you're in the middle of a Telnet session, kind of. Like, like as soon as you type, like, you type an S, then the S is up there. It's like instantly.
Very fast, yeah.
You're like logged into a live thing, and people are able to like see what you're writing and then, you know, edit it as you're writing it. I mean, it's really the epitome of true collaboration. Everybody's like working on the same document. It'd be fun to just get like a bunch of people together and just write a story and just.
So you know. Aaron, are you keeping with JavaScript? Are you keeping a concurrent connection to the server? You're not making a new request every time, right? You're keeping like a live request open?
Yeah, well, we have our own concept of what we call like a real-time transport stream.
Uh-huh.
And there's like different levels of the way connection works. So like some modern browsers support streaming connections that are more persistent. And then on older browsers, we fall back to just...
So the newer the browser, the faster and more responsive it's going to be. Kind of,
yeah.
So a quick announcement. So we've hit the 8-person limit on our public GeekSpeak pad. So I've just made another one, which is GeekSpeak 2. So if you're trying to get into etherpad.com/GeekSpeak and it's not letting you, then check out etherpad.com/GeekSpeak 2.
So, Aaron, is there a way we can get a free paid version from you so that we don't run into this problem again? Good. Well, we'll talk after the show, so next week we won't have that limit. That'd be great. Now, you can run this system. You basically, for corporate environments where you're behind a firewall, you're allowing them to run your entire system. So you sell it. That's how you make your money. Is that right?
Yeah. The current product we're selling is a version of Etherpad that you can just run behind your server. So that way, like, all the documents you put on it are secured behind your firewall, and the info that's transmitted over the net is entirely contained within your network. Nice. And then we're also working on an on-demand version that will provide security through like an account system and HTTPS.
How would this
have a DNSSEC yet.
How would this compare to, say, Google Docs? A lot of people know what Google Docs are, and that seems like a collaborative thing. What's the differentiator between the two products?
Yeah, a really good question, actually. So we do get compared to Google Docs a lot. So Google Docs also lets multiple people edit the same document at once. But the big problem with Google Docs is that it takes about 10 to 15 seconds for an edit to propagate. The way Google Docs model works is basically every 10 to 15 seconds or so, each client refreshes and pulls a master copy of the document from the server, and at the same time uploads any changes they have. So if two people edit the document at the same time within the same 15-second window, it's very possible for one person's edits to overwrite another person's edits. And so for the use cases where Etherpad comes in, it actually makes a big difference that in Etherpad it's really real time. So compared to the 10 to 15 seconds, the edit latency on Etherpad is limited only by the speed of the internet connection. So if you have a 50 millisecond ping time, it'll be about 50 milliseconds before edits are propagated on Etherpad. And so this lets you actually like have real-time note-taking, say like during a meeting, someone could be taking notes like on what's being spoken. And 10 to 15 seconds is actually a big lag. So like if there's an inaccuracy in those notes, other people observing the room can see and correct that. Right. Before like the conversation right. moves.
If I make a small verbal change to a sentence I'm hearing and it's 15 seconds later, the person's on the next conversation, you don't even catch that necessarily. But if it's immediate and someone else is reading it as you're writing it, they can fix it right away. It's really quite, I mean, the experience of using this is very neat. It's like kind of two keyboards on one screen. It's a pretty neat feature. Do you have any, does AppJet have any other applications that you're working on or that you have public?
Not currently. So sort of in the background, we're developing this JavaScript server-side platform for building real-time web apps.
So basically the structure you've created to make Etherpad actually function, you're thinking this is a useful feature as an application environment.
Yeah. And it may become a product in its own one day.
Miles and I work on the tools that enable us to publish the GeekSpeak website, and one of the things that became really clear is that as soon as you have this kind of functionality, let's kind of put it in every format, any place where you can edit content and you've got a small group of people that want to do that, why not enable this feature of Etherpad in that space? And then, of course, the other place would be just in general other web services using kind of real-time communication. You make an application much more snappy. And that's really what we're talking about when we talk about Web 2.0. A lot of that has to do with back-end asynchronous communication.
Yeah. We think real-time is really important, and we sort of feel like people are fundamentally impatient. Nobody likes to wait. So,
and if you don't want to wait right now, you'd like to ask questions of Aaron or of any of us about online collaboration or web application development, please feel free to call us right now. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. And that's in the 831 area code, 476-2800. Or you can call us toll-free anywhere in the continental U.S., I think in Canada as well. Anyway, 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. 5877.
You know, another thing that that we should probably bring up is that when you are in Etherpad, you also have this little chat window that you can chat in. So you're working on the document on the left, like the big window, and then there's a little window on the right where you can just, all the people that are involved can start chatting. So you're all working on a document, and at the same time you're sort of talking about it, and then underneath it there's a revision thing where you can just hit save now, and it'll just freeze each version of what you're working on, so you can just go back and see all the different versions of the document as it's been progressing, which is another really cool thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I think one of the biggest advantages, in my opinion, I mean, there are a lot of real-time collaboration web applications. I think one of the advantages of Etherpad is it's just text. And, I mean, at this point, it looks like you have bold, italics, and underline, which is that relatively new?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't think we saw that either last week or the week before, but I guess if you keep it to just rich text and web links, then you can keep the size down and keep your latency down too.
Yeah, I think text is a nice way of taking notes. Like, you can think of it as sort of like a shared digital whiteboard that's text. And so, like, if you ever have a meeting where you write down a lot of text on a whiteboard, and feel like you'd like to have more than one author, or someone's like voice conference into the meeting and can't see the whiteboard that you're writing on, Etherpad is a really useful replacement for that.
Absolutely. Well, taking calls with questions and comments about online application development, collaborative editing, mm-hmm. just kind of the space that starts emerging when you're talking about completely removing location as being an importance for collaborative work. It would be a great tool to support meetings in general. In fact, using Etherpad while you're having a video chat or an audio chat kind of makes a thing happen where it's almost better ways of communicating than having a traditional meeting, because you've got this tool that allows us to take notes right away, make assignments, and everybody can see it at the same time. It's a very cool feature. You basically remove the note taker from the meeting if everyone's doing it. In any case, you're welcome to call us and ask us questions about any of that topic. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. Aaron, I'm always really curious about how a business starts up in this space, because really, you don't need a big building. You don't need a lot of investors. You need some really smart people and time. How many people are in AppJet right now, the company? How many employees?
Yeah, we have 4 full-time employees and 1 part-time.
And you're the CEO, so I'm assuming you run a lot of the business aspects. You're not a programmer?
Oh, absolutely, I'm a programmer.
Okay. Yeah. So that's how it works in a smaller company. Everyone's helping code. Did you kind of... How many people... You founded it with somebody else?
Yeah, so my co-founder was David Greenspan. He and I went to high school together, where we were co-captains of our math team. So I actually listened with great interest to your your segment on the innate abilities of men and women in math. And then he and I also went to college together, and so he's like the smartest guy I know. So we founded this in 2007, and then very early on, JD Zamprescu joined us, also a guy we knew from college. And then very recently we hired Daniel Clemens to do sales. One number of customers.
When you had enough customers where you needed somebody actually selling?
Yeah, selling, managing them.
So you're profitable now? And is your business model purchase or service?
I don't know what's the difference. I mean, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I meant, do you sell a package and that's the last time you speak to the customer, or you more do a service level agreement where you're doing a monthly kind of service for them, or contractual kind of work?
We do both. So like for the one product that we're selling right now is the behind the firewall edition of Etherpad. Yeah. We call it Private Network Edition. So that gets you pay for a perpetual license, and then if you don't want any support, you can just pay for the software and that's it. But we also sell support where we can help you install it or help you do whatever comes up as you're using it.
We just got a question through the Etherpad that we're dealing with, and that's USS Rover just asked, wouldn't a full IRC or a Java chat work better than Etherpad? And I think he's not seeing the... We're using it right now kind of like a chat because we happen to be doing a live show. But if we were trying to, let's say, document our transcript of what the show was, if we actually had a whole bunch of people doing that, as I write, people could be writing it and fixing it as it was written instead of having a whole bunch of indiscrete posts. That's the big difference between what Etherpad is and chat. Was that clear to everybody?
Yeah, it's a document. I mean, you end up with a document, and you can chat at the same time. It's really hard to put into words, but we use it every show. I mean, you know, I think I brought this up like a couple months ago, and we tried it just as a news story, and we're like, this thing rocks.
Yeah.
You know, we're using it all the time, and it's perfect for us because, you know, we are changing the show as we go. We're seeing things, and it's a live, you know, we end up with a transcript of the show, I mean, kind of, I guess.
Yeah. You know. Well, let's go ahead and take a call since we've got that whole radio ability to do that. Eric from Santa Cruz, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if your guests could elaborate a little bit on how Stanford Law School is using this technology. I was in law school recently, and everyone in law school, or at least 99% of the students, take notes in all their classes with laptop computers. So I can see how it would be very useful. But a law school also tends to be very competitive. And so I'm wondering, you know, exactly how they employ it and if the law school itself is behind it, or if it was just some students got together and how that all works.
Great. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Aaron?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if it's officially endorsed by the school. I know it was definitely started by the students. So basically, you're right, 99% of the students take notes during classes on laptop computers, and often there's like they're taking the exact same notes because they're all in the same class. So what many of the students at Stanford Law are doing is breaking up into smaller groups, and one person, and they'll switch off who like the quote-unquote master note taker is, and the master note taker will like lead the note-taking process, and then the other ones will watch the Etherpad document grow and like make any corrections or add anything that they think was omitted to it.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it, because of course you have two people typing the exact same thing at the same time, it doesn't really work. But if you kind of throw the flow, and that's of course what the chat is on the side, right? I need to go get a cup of coffee, fill in here. Rick, who answers the phone every week for us on Geekspeak, has been doing it for years. So if you do call in 476-2800 or toll free 1-800-655-5877, you talk to Rick first before you talk to us. And Rick says that yesterday he was at CSUMB, he's going to the master's program there, and he was chatting with four of his students via Skype, and they were using Etherpad to do the editing and the work together as the assignment. So really that whole audio video interface plus this is the way that he's doing this kind of virtual class. I'm really curious because Rick has started up this master's program in education analysis, and it's all online and collaborative, and this is the way to do it, I'm assuming. Anyway, we are taking calls.
On that?
Yeah, Eric, go ahead.
And just, I mean, I do think that law school is a great application for this, but I'm curious about the competitive nature. I mean, because law, maybe Stanford's a little different because it's such an elite law school, but a lot of law schools, there's really competitive attitude and a lack of sharing. In fact, some law schools repeatedly, students will even tear pages out of the case books. so other students, I mean, that's obviously now with the internet and Lexis,
it's right.
applicable, but just wondering if...
well, you theoretically could use this for misinformation too, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering, if your guest has any insight into that.
All right, thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah, I don't know much about law school in particular. I was a math major as undergrad.
Right. More of a collaborative space.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Of course, is it's a collaborative tool, and if you've got an adversarial environment, collaboration is not the easiest thing anyway, right? That's
what I just never believed that this like cutthroat attitude in school in general is really so beneficial. Like I was always happy to collaborate with like with classmates, and I thought that I actually gained a lot by like helping to teach classmates on different subjects.
Right. Ben, you got a question?
Yeah, I was wondering about Google Waves, because they've been making I'm going to avoid actually using the
What is it? It's an application?
I don't know much about Google Waves. I'm curious what your take on it, because what I've heard is that it's all about collaboration, and obviously it's backed by Google, which is humongous. But I'm curious what your take on it is, and
I don't know. I think it's still like really early.
It's
a little bit unclear to me whether Wave is going to be like a consumer focused application. Like, will my non-technical friends know the term Wave and like use it as an application like Gmail?
Yeah.
Or will it be more of a developer tool, and then like other people build applications on top of it?
Yeah, it just came out like what, less than a week ago, I think.
Yeah, within the last few weeks, pretty recent.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
I think it's basically still really early to see what Wave it's going to be about.
And we also have one more question from someone on the Etherpad. David I asked, what's the largest number of users that you've had on Etherpad, and what kind of load do you think it could take?
Mm.
Yeah, so the...
And also, we're limited to a certain number of colors. Of, you know, like...
Yeah, well, how many users?
Perceivable colors.
Well, there's no technical limitation to the number of colors we can have. But the number of users in the document does start to be a limiting factor when everyone... the actual limiting factor is not the number of users watching the document, but the number of users typing simultaneously.
Mm.
So that's sort of one of the reasons why we restrict it to 8, because it's more than 8 people start to type simultaneously. It starts to like really nail your CPU and network connection.
Gotcha. One of the things I would like for Geekspeak, for example, is we have a chat that's kind of the public side, but mostly the reason why the private side, excuse me, that's internal. The only reason we really keep it internal is because we don't want other people editing it. It wouldn't be bad for other people to see it. Like, that's not a problem. So it's like one of those things where I could see a use of a paid system. Also, the idea of having an Etherpad that's always attached to each show instead of the one that we use every week. Like, we kind of erase the stuff from last week and edit it again. It'd be kind of cool to keep it stagnant and basic. I mean, always connected to each show. That the features of that idea of having a live document that represents any web page is a very exciting thing. It's very similar to comments, but of course it's more rich, if you will.
Yeah, we absolutely want to do that. I think what you're saying is, like, you want to have a document that can be like a read-only link to a document that, like, thousands potentially of people could watch. And we're definitely working on that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've been speaking with Aaron Iba. He's the founder and CEO of AppJet. AppJet's premier application is Etherpad, E-T-H-E-R pad. And you can kind of imagine the ether, which used to be a concept in science and is now not pseudoscience.
Yeah, deprecated.
The idea of this, you know, virtual space kind of thing, and a pad, of course, a pad of paper. So Etherpad is this kind of virtual piece of paper that lots of people can edit at the same time. They're at etherpad.com. We use it every week for both public and private communications among the geeks while we're doing the show. If you got a group of people, especially if they're in different locations, give it a shot, etherpad.com. Aaron Iba, thank you so much for being on GeekSpeak today.
Yeah, my pleasure, and I really enjoyed the listening to the show earlier.
And I'll contact you. Well, good. I hope you listen again. We podcast and everything every week. And I'll contact you again soon to maybe make more connections with GeekSpeak. It'll be really fun.
Sounds great.
Thanks so much. All right, I got to bounce back to my room so I know what to say. Let's see the other Etherpad. There it is. All right, GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics. Santa Cruz Electronics offers an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. The geeks today were Ben Jaffe, Miles Elam in the first half, and Al Luckow. My name is Lyle Troxell. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, online at kosp.org.
So, Al, you have a lot of crazy USB devices that you talk about at the end of the show. How on earth could you possibly use them all? That's my big question.
Well, this one here was suggested by a listener, Michael Wheeler, through our GeekSpeak forums. It's a 49-port USB hub.
What?
49 ports.
That thing's big.
But you know what? I could use all those 49 because, I mean, you have a camera, you've got, you know, your printer, and then you've got your other devices, your iPod.
Your memory sticks shaped like
memory
different things.
Sticks.
That's 1 year's worth of USB devices.
Yeah, it's by a company called Cambrionics, and they developed it just as sort of a development platform, but they got so many people, you know, inquiring about it. They're like overwhelmed. As soon as they came out, they thought, oh, just who would want this? But they come out and they announce it, and all of a sudden everybody wants this thing. They're like, yeah,
buying your USB devices.
Yeah, well, you know, everything's USB, and they put like two measly ports on your computer. You got to go out and buy a hub. The most you can get in a hub usually is like six.
Right. Normally they're like four.
And
that's the other thing that's so frustrating when you get a hub. You know, you plug it into one of your ports, and you've gotten a four port hub. Well, you've only added three, right? Because you lost one, right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And you've got your speakers that are hooked up to your monitor.
So
your
does this
keyboard.
Thing look like a rack mount thing? Or is it like a big shoe?
Basically looks like a giant circuit board with a bunch of ports in it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool. So,
All right. Al, thank you for giving us the USB update. I really appreciate that. You can ask us and add information to us. You notice that Al just used a post from one of our forums. If you've got a crazy USB device you saw, you want to tell us about it, or other questions or ideas for shows, we're here all the time online at geekspeak.org. Please join us. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned for Car Talk.